Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. It's time for our Week in Review, beginning with a resolution condemning hate that finally passed in the House after considerable wrangling. It was a response to comments by Minnesota Democrat Ilhan Omar that some consider anti-Semitic. Here's Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Although I don't believe it was intended in any anti-Semitic way, but the fact is that that's how it was interpreted. We have to remove all doubt.
Omar's remarks drew sharp criticism, including from Republicans like Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
And it's unconscionable for any member of the United States Congress, even less a member of the House Foreign Relations Committee, to repeatedly traffic in base stereotypes.
The episode once again revealed divisions within the Democratic Party along racial, religious, and generational lines. Massachusetts freshman Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, for example, helped push party leaders toward broader language in the resolution, saying, quote, "We should have equity in our outrage." Joining me now to discuss is Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at New Roots AMA Church in Dorchester. Hello, Reverend.
Good to be here. Happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day to you as well. And also with us is Jennifer Braceras, political consultant and senior fellow for legal policy with the Independent Women's Forum. How fitting. And welcome back to Radio Boston,
Thank
Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
All right. So Representative Omar has been accused of anti-Semitism for some of her previous comments as well. You know, she's apologized for previous tweets that said things like Israel has hypnotized the world or that politicians' support for Israel is, quote, all about the Benjamins, as in money. And this all flared up again recently when she made remarks at a panel discussion in D.C.
I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country.
She went on to compare the lobbying power of Israel to the NRA or the fossil fuel industry. Reverend Mariama, what's your takeaway from this whole saga, both the remarks themselves and the way the resolution was evolving, bungled, and finally passed yesterday?
Yeah, so I think, I guess there are three things I think about. So first of all, I think the conversation around Israel is a challenging and nuanced conversation. And whenever you try to have a nuanced conversation in a soundbite way, that's a challenge. That's an issue. You're gonna end up in this territory. What I think is difficult for me about that is that actually has become the norm of the day. And so I think if we want to have a conversation about that, if we want to say that it's not fair to reduce things to soundbites, I completely agree. And then I also agree we should have a broad conversation about that. So to hear Mitch McConnell say that we shouldn't have Congress people who traffic in base stereotypes while supporting a president that has routinely trafficked in base stereotypes feels very hard for me to take seriously. So if we want to have a nuanced conversation about Israel and about anti-Semitism, then let's do that. There is a deep challenge because it is the only country in the world that has ethno-religious citizenship. So that makes for some complexity about how do you separate how you feel about a particular group of people and how you feel about the country. If there's a mix of those two, and that's the only place, for instance, being born there doesn't inherently make you, you know, Israeli. So I think, but that's again a kind of nuance and complexity that doesn't fit in sound bites. And I think we should have that conversation. I think it's been challenging because we've ended up in a stereotype back and forth from people who I have not seen play deep leadership on this issue.
But Jennifer Braceras,
I think conversations about Israel are complex. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And I think the way you raise it does show nuance in your understanding of the debate. However, I don't want to have a nuanced conversation about Representative Omar. I want to have a very blunt conversation about her. She is an anti-Semite. Her comments were deliberate. Her comments were provocative, intentionally provocative. She has used old tropes and stereotypes about Jews controlling the banking industry, about Jews controlling the media, about Jews controlling the foreign policy apparatus of this country. These are tropes and stereotypes that go back not just in this country, but go back to pre-World War II Germany and well before that.
So you don't buy Nancy Pelosi's argument that, you know, as an immigrant who didn't grow up here, she may not be as familiar with the history or the significance of what she was saying.
Oh, she knew exactly what she was doing. She knows exactly, and she will continue to do exactly what she has been doing, because she is an anti-Semite and she is an unabashed anti-Semite. And I do understand that it's upsetting for some people to see condemnation of this new young woman of color representative by people who aren't willing to also stand up against hate in other circumstances. And to that, I would say we need to stand up to hate in all circumstances, and we need to take each situation as it comes. And so a global condemnation of hate is basically as good as nothing. I mean, we're all against hate in the abstract. That's easy. It's easy to pass a resolution saying we're against hate. The question is, do you know it when you see it? And are you willing to call it out when it's in your own house, meaning your own body, the House of Representatives, and in particular in your own party? And that is what the Republicans did with Representative Steve King. They called him out. They punished him. And that is what the Democrats in the House leadership need to do with Representative Omar.
Although, as Mary Emma pointed out earlier, they haven't always passed like a resolution like this every time the president says something that people are offended by.
I mean, as far as I know, this is the first time I've ever heard of a resolution being passed.
Well, so what?
It doesn't have to be a resolution. Take her off the Foreign Affairs Committee. Censure her. Do something. She is an anti-Semite. She is deliberately provocative. She is on the committee that makes decisions about our relationship with Israel, and she's made it clear that she is not interested in a nuanced conversation about Israel. She has made it clear that she is against Israel and against our relationship with Israel, and she needs to be off that committee, and she needs to be dealt with by the leadership of her party.
But I guess my question for Democrats, though, is to what extent do you do what, Jennifer, you're saying you should do, which is just handle your own business, you know, handle your own house first, versus doing what Miriam, I think you did, Miriam, you did rightly and point out, well, here's what Steve King has said, or here's what Donald Trump has said. I mean, do you play that sort of, well, what about game? Because there is some merit to that, and there are degrees. So, you know what I mean? Do you stand on principle, or do you play politics?
I think one of the challenges here is, I've heard people say that stuff about Muslims, and there's not been any conversation about any introduction of anything. Now, I'm not Muslim or Jewish, but as a person who sits in between, I have not seen consistency. And so
I agree.
If we want to go there and we want to be about that, then let's do that. Let's do it consistently.
But we can't have whataboutism. We have to deal with each situation as it presents itself. And this is the situation presenting itself now.
And I hear you. It actually, though, strengthens the argument of people who say this when we only do it in one context. Because it then says only one kind of hate speech is problematic, and all the other ones, well, you shouldn't do them, but there will be no consequences. And so I think that doing it that way actually strengthens the argument that only one group has the power to get that kind of censure.
Well, look, I, for example, saw Liz Cheney on the news today, representative from Wisconsin. She spoke out very strongly against Steve King. She has spoken out very strongly against the president when he has said things that have been insensitive at best. And she spoke out very strongly today against Representative Omar. Now, I can't speak for every single member of the Republican caucus, but there are certainly many consistent Republicans and Democrats on this issue. The problem is that in this particular case, we could not get a majority of the Democratic Party to condemn this particular person, and that is a very sad thing.
And I guess what I'm ultimately saying is I understand what you're saying about it being too broad. But what is hard for me, and I think, again, it actually strengthens the argument, is when there are only consequences in one case and not in others. If we're going to do it, let's be consistent. Let's be consistent in our fighting against all hate. And then I would say, if we say this is the first time, but every time after this, we are going to apply the same same test, the same thing, then I'll be fine. But I'm not necessarily hearing people say, let's make a shift in how we handle these issues across the board. And if we're not going to be consistent in all forms of hate, then I'm not sure it actually moves the conversation to do it in just one case.
Well, that is the argument that we heard from Democrat Chuck Schumer, and he was talking about what McConnell had said yesterday, and he's making the point that Mariama is making just now that Republicans need to handle their own business as well.
Why doesn't Senator McConnell talk about the people in the march in Sharpsville who marched on a synagogue and chanted, burn it down, and then Donald Trump said both sides are to blame?
So I guess, I mean, Jennifer, are Republicans trying to, you know, they've been, for the 2 years that Donald Trump has been in office, routinely accused of bigotry. I mean, are Republicans perhaps reacting so strongly to Representative Omar because they want to try to put the shoe on the other foot for political reasons here, and they're not?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. I just gave the example of Representative Cheney, who's been completely consistent on all of these issues.
But a lot of Republicans have given Trump
a leader. She's a leader of the party. And look, you know, the president has said some things that have been, like I said, insensitive at best. I have condemned them. Other people have condemned them. And now we are standing up and we are condemning the anti-Semitism of Representative Omar. It's not inconsistent on my part. It's not inconsistent on, you know, I can't, we could sit here and go through every member of Congress and say whether they've been consistent or not. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're here to do. We're here to talk about Representative Omar and whether or not there should be sanctions for her. There were sanctions for Representative King, and rightfully so. He was an embarrassment to the Republican Party, and there's no place for people like that to hold leadership positions or chairmanships within the Republican Party, and the GOP made that very clear.
Go ahead, Mariama.
So, I think everybody should speak out. Where I'm having the question is, what are the consequences, and can we be consistent about the consequences? Because that's where I see an inconsistency. And I do see inconsistency with some people in terms of speaking out in general, right? For me, Charlottesville is also about anti-Semitism.
Of course. And they were carrying
so,
Nazi flags.
Right. So I think, you know, folks who backpedaled on that and then are so excited about this, you're like, if you're truly against anti-Semitism, I need you to be even in that consistent in your call.
I think, you were talking about nuance before. I do think it'll sound crazy to say this, but in some ways, Charlottesville was a nuanced issue. It was not nuanced in terms of there were hateful people carrying swastikas who are obviously racist and anti-Semites and filled with hate, and they should be condemned, and there's no two sides of that issue. What was nuanced about it was the debate over whether or not Confederate statues should come down and be moved. And so I think that when some people heard the president say there are good people on both sides of the issue, some people thought he meant on the issue of statue removal. And there is. There are two sides of that issue. There are not two sides of the issue of the Nazi flag. There are not two sides of the issue of those particular marchers, those particular demonstrators. But things did get, I think, you know, people say, well, if you weren't ready to come down on Charlottesville, then you're not willing to condemn hate. That's not necessarily true. You can condemn Charlottesville and still understand that there's a nuanced debate about statues and which ones to remove and when and why.
It does seem, though, that the degree to which you're willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt does depend, at least to some degree, on which party you come from. And we could spend our entire time together on this subject, but I do want to get to a couple of more. One is a big local story that was in our headlines this week, and that was UMass President Marty Meehan saying in his State of the University address on Monday that the university system plans to launch a new national online college specifically for adult education.
This is a way for the University of Massachusetts to be strategic, to make smart decisions that make sense, and it will add to the revenue of the university over the long run.
An online college, he says, is necessary to confront changes in demographics and a decrease in demand for higher ed. And Governor Charlie Baker says he's on board, too.
UMass as a system should be the adult online education leader here in the Commonwealth for people who are either looking to secure a credential because of their place of employment or to finish the degree that they never got finished.
But the question, of course, is can the university compete with already established online programs like Southern New Hampshire University? President Meehan says yes.
But the UMass brand is a good brand. It's a good brand regionally, but it's also a good brand nationally and internationally. So we think that we can grow our online program to scale, and we think, frankly, the UMass brand has a better likelihood of being attracted to students, adult learners all over the country.
All right, Jennifer Braceras, does this make sense to you? Has President Meehan swayed you that online education is the way to go for the UMass system?
Yes, I think he's right. I'm a former trustee of the university and a graduate of the UMass Amherst campus, and I have to say a big fan of President Meehan and the job he's done at the university. I do think that online education is the wave of the future, but I think in particular what he was talking about is the financial need of the institution to diversify and to think strategically, because UMass is in an unusual position compared to other state universities. We are located in Massachusetts, which has all these other private institutions that they compete with in a way that the state university systems in the Midwest don't. And so we have that, and we also have a five-campus system in a relatively small state. And so UMass needs to begin to think about other revenue models. But the university also needs to think about streamlining what it already has. And it needs to think about whether it can reasonably support five campuses, or even if it sticks with five campuses, whether it can streamline and avoid duplication of programming at the five campuses. And there are other ways that the university can cut back, and that would be one of them.
Well, and the number of campuses is one of the questions that was brought on by last year's $75 million acquisition of Mount Ida, right? So Mariama, I think one of the criticisms mm-hmm. here would be that we're seeing kind of a scattershot approach. On the one hand, the system is saying we need to go online, but we also see them expanding brick and mortar. How do you see that?
So as a layperson, but also someone who lives pretty close to UMass Boston, I heard this and my gut reaction was, I hope this is true. I hope that it can bring in more money. And it felt like I wasn't sure. And again, I haven't done all the research and look at the economic modeling. It felt to me potential wishful thinking that it's going to fill the gap as I've understood how deep that gap is. So I do think it's good to be thinking into the future. But I have noticed the deep investment in more buildings and that's probably also to try to compete with the other local colleges. But I hope it will be successful. But I was concerned by a comment I read by someone at UNH that said they were not sure if they had made the investment now, if they would reap the same benefits, that what they have received was because they got in before anybody else was there and therefore were able to sort of gain a sizable market share.
That comment caught my eye, too.
Right. But I mean, Southern New Hampshire got in more than a decade ago.
Right.
And they've built a 93,000 enrollment. It's been a big
right.
success.
And so the question is,
at the same time, that comment was made by somebody who probably is petrified of UMass cutting into its market share.
Hmm.
Well, I take that with a grain of salt, but I do think, again, this question is, if you're going to do a new business model, what is going to be your competitive advantage over those other folks? And I'm not sure I'm clear yet what that
is. Well, I think it's the UMass brand and the UMass, the academic brand, and I think, as President Meehan says, does carry a lot of weight in New England, around the country, and around the world, and probably more so than Southern New Hampshire. Right. And so that's what he's banking on, and I wish him the best of luck with it. I would also like to see UMass streamline its programming on its five campuses and think about ways it can cut back in what it's currently offering that may not be financially sustainable.
And there will certainly be opportunities to acquire more brick and mortars if they want. We see other small colleges struggling as well. I do want to get to one other topic while I have both of you. And the last subject we wanted to get to in our week in review is one we came to earlier in the week as well. This is the death of Jassy Correa, the 23-year-old woman found dead after she was allegedly kidnapped on a night out to celebrate her birthday at a Boston nightclub. Listeners, of course, this is a sensitive topic that may not be appropriate for all ears, so please use your discretion. Correa's wake will be held later today. There was a vigil last night at the teen center in Dorchester, and family friend Isora Mendez was there and said it was hard because she has lost other loved ones to violence too.
It's tough because how are we going to explain this to a young people? For someone to go to a club on her birthday and just take her happiness away and take her away and just took her life, that's really, really tough.
Mariama, I know that part of the job of a pastor is to go to vigils like this. I'm sure it's one of the hardest parts of the job description. Yeah. How are you processing the news this week?
Well, this is my neighborhood. I live pretty close to the teen center. I know folks in the neighborhood who knew the family. And, you know, I think this is one of those points, and I don't try to tell people that life is fair because this is not fair. It's not right. And I think we need to think both from a community perspective, how do we protect each other, take care of each other? And then I think we need to think from a public safety perspective. Are there things we could be doing to make sure that this doesn't happen? This is the second young woman for this to have happened to. With the other one young woman, fortunately, they were able to find her before this happened. This is what happened, but
right. There's
a high likelihood it could have been. If 24 hours more had gone by, we might have had another fatality. And so I think it's a time to have a conversation as a community about. I remember when I was younger and going out with my friends, we had a code about how we sort of watched each other. To be honest with you, it's just really heartbreaking, particularly for her child who will grow out without her mom.
Yeah, a two-year-old daughter.
And so I think our community also needs to think about how we're coming around that little girl to provide her the love and support that she needs and to honor her mom's legacy in a way that it will never take away all the pain. But will allow her to live a life in which she knows that her mom was loved and that she is loved.
You know, when you talk about that code when you were going out and you talk about what do you do to stay safe, you know, we had this conversation earlier in the week with the Suffolk County District Attorney, Rachel Rollins, and she made an interesting counterpoint, which was that we should be talking not only about what do we tell our daughters about how to stay safe when they go out, but also make sure that we're talking to our sons as well.
Rather than asking questions about where Jassy was or where her friends were, we need to focus our attention on men who are overwhelmingly the ones that are making these horrible decisions and being violent against women. It's not a women's issue. It's a problem that men have to take responsibility for in their own lives, in their sons' lives, and in the social lives that they have with friends and colleagues.
So how about that, Jennifer Braceras? Is she right on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think bystander training is important for everybody. We really need to make people aware that when they see somebody, whether they're being harassed in a bar or they look uncomfortable or they're leaving alone or maybe look like they're leaving under duress, you know, if you see something, say something, stand up. We have to protect each other. We have to do a better job of raising our children not only to be cautious and protective of themselves and their friends, but of the people they see around them. I heard Rachel's interview in full, and I know she talked a lot about going into the schools and doing education and educating boys to respect girls. And with all due respect, you know, somebody who's going to murder somebody or rape somebody isn't going to be changed by peer education in the fourth grade. I mean, this goes so much deeper. And the person who did this to Jassy is a monster. And I don't know that any amount of intervention in his youth would have changed the type of person he turned out to be. Now, I don't know, you know, family circumstances, I think, can play a big role and, you know, role models and teachers, but sending someone into the schools to do an awareness program here and there isn't going to change an individual like this.
So I'd agree to some extent, but I also think we need to have a really deep conversation, because I actually think we would like to imagine that all of these are, you know, monstrous people. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't understand how people go into a spa and have sex with a woman that's clearly... This doesn't feel... I don't imagine all those people had to know that these women were not there consensually. So we've got some deep things, and they're deep in our society. They're not just some... a few guys here or there that are bad apples. So I do think we need to have a much deeper conversation.
Oh, no, there are a lot of bad apples. Oh, there's a... That's the problem.
And so I think... And so the reason why I think we need to have that conversation is because something's wrong with our society if we're producing that many people that think this is okay. We need to have a deep conversation with ourselves.
I agree that there's a cultural problem. But part of that is part of it's in the home. Part of it's the breakdown of the family. Part of it's mental health issues, drug and alcohol abuse. I mean, culturally, there is a lot that contributes to the violence that we've seen on the front pages of the newspaper. And all of those things need to be addressed. I mean, it's not a single pronged issue.
That's Jennifer Braceras, political consultant and senior fellow for legal policy at the Independent Women's Forum. Jennifer, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you.
And Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Reverend, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.